Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday morning. Joining me from Phoenix, Arizona, where he is right now covering the Suns and Mavericks series, it's Anscapes, Mark J. Spears. But Spears, you're going to be bouncing around this round, right?
I'm going to stay out west. Keep it easy, at least for the first four games. I'm in Phoenix, which isn't a far ride from my home in the Bay, and then do the two games in San Francisco and then kind of go from there. Yeah, we'll I'm going to stay out here.
We'll talk about that Warriors-Grizzly series in a little bit. Joining me from one floor above me, I believe, yes. In Boston, Andrew Lopez and I relocated from New Orleans, the New Orleans Phoenix series, to the Celtics Bucks series. We covered game one on Sunday. Andrew Lopez, what's up, man?
I would like to go back to Phoenix, not for any games or anything like that, but it was 98 degrees in Phoenix when we left. It was like 50 when I walked back to the room last night. So I would very much like that weather back.
Well, I'm just going to say to you that I'm 16 days on the road. When I left, I was planning on Phoenix and New Orleans. I have one non-suit long sleeve shirt, which I'm wearing right now. And I'm limping through the Boston portion of this. So speaking of limping, is that a terrible transition? Before we talk about the second round, Zion Williamson gave his first interview in what, Andrew, 6 months?
Yeah, since September 29th or 28th, ever since Media Day, first time we had talked to him.
Yeah, so you were there. Actually, all three of us were there in New Orleans for game six. And Zion, what was your main takeaways from what Zion had to say, talking for the first time in so long?
Well, obviously the big one was the declaration that he would sign the extension, right? I mean, obviously there's been so much talk about him, whether or not he would.
Can you real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you say exactly what he was asked? You may not have it in front of you, but can you say what he was asked and then what he said?
Very simple. Will you sign the extension if offered? That was the key part of that. The question is if offered. And his answer was, of course, I couldn't sign it fast enough. So he made it clear that is what he would want to sign. We talked to David Griffin, shortly after that. And Griff made it a point to say, those discussions are going to be a challenge. That was the word that he used. I don't think it's going to be a simple negotiation when July 1st hits because of the fact that he's only played 85 games in three seasons. That was kind of the biggest thing that I took away. He kind of danced around some other things that we asked him in terms of, is the foot healthy or anything like that. But, he seemed like his upbeat self. I mean, that's what he has been when he has talked to the media. When we have seen him around the team this year, he has looked to be, enjoying his teammates, especially in the last 2 months since he got back from Portland from doing his rehab up there. He's looked like he's bought in, at least to the team side. I know, one of the things he had a lot of praise for Willie Green, who is now his third head coach in 3 years in the NBA. Really his fifth head coach in 5 years when you think about
it. He's never played for Willie.
Yeah, and he's never even seen
him practice.
So that he had a lot of praise for Willie. And I think, he seemed to be excited in that moment. But, when it comes to Z, it's more like what can you actually show me instead of what can you say? So that's where I'd like to see where this next step goes.
Spears, before we talk about the extension, you've been around the league a long time. You've seen a lot of players. You've seen a lot of players go through a lot of things. Zion's situation is pretty unique. What did you think about what he had to say and didn't have to say when he finally spoke?
Well, I think in New Orleans, man, there was probably a big breath of relief, right? This is a franchise that Chris Paul left, understandably so, when the ownership situation was in disarray. Anthony Davis walked out and had wore a shirt that said, that's all, folks, which still bothers my mother. She is still upset about that. And the city of New Orleans is so upset about that, that after the last hurricane they had, a note, I went into a grocery store and everything was gone except for Anthony Davis, like Ruffles. Those were the only thing that even in tragedy, people refused to eat, right? Drew Holiday quietly, in a very professional way, asked out and got his wish. And I'm sure now that, well, I heard a lot of people come up to me and say, man, thanks for talking to CJ. And I'm like, thank me, thank him. CJ is the one that says, CJ McCollum's the one that says he wants to finish his career there. And it just made the people there feel so good, because there's always been this exodus of superstars. And one thing I like about what CJ said is that he actually has gotten to know what the city was like, instead of being like most NBA players that come through to just sit in their hotel and order some gumbo from room service. And he's fallen in love with the city. He wants to finish his career there. But I think ultimately hearing Zion say that was music to their ears in New Orleans because of the past. And I think CJ and Willie Green are the reason why. Like, CJ is the big brother that Zion needed in the locker room. I remember, and I know I'm going on a tangent here, Brian, but Melo's rookie year, Kiki Vanderway was thinking about getting LaPhonso Ellis just so he could be there for Melo in the locker room, and he didn't. Years later, Melo told me he wished that was the case. So now CJ is a guy, that a vet who's been there, who could hold Zion accountable. And then Willie, I mean, these players seem to love him and want to run through the locker room for him. So I wonder if you guys would have asked Zion that question in December, would he have felt the same way? If you asked him that in Portland, would he have felt the same way? But I think now that he sees how cool this environment is, how great it's being coached, he got a big brother in CJ, like, why would he not want to be part of that?
Well, I'm not sure it's as simple, though, because he said he'd sign the extension, but I don't know what extension is. I mean, they're going to offer him an extension, I would assume, right, Andrew? He will be offered something.
Yes.
But and this is with all due respect to Zion, at some point he's got to play, man. Like, we can't just keep putting him on this pedestal for one season for potential, right? Yeah. I mean, like, they treat him with such kid gloves because of the potential. But they did really well without him.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And I wonder if it's and Andrew can handle this more than me. Like, I really wonder what the guys in the locker room thought about the cloud of his situation.
Well, I do think that that's something that contributed to the 1-12 start, the 3-16 start. At that time, you remember, it was, you know, oh, well, we hope to have him back for opening day. And then it was, okay, well, it's 2 weeks for scanning. And then it's two more weeks. And I think there was this kind of, when is he going to come back? I don't want to say save the team, but like, when is he going to come back, add his 27-7 to the lineup, and we're going to take off? And I don't think it was after until early December when maybe everybody involved was like, all right, maybe he's not walking through that door, and we need to kind of go about our business without him. And then, you know, they had a nice finish without him, but I mean, this was still a team that finished 36-46. They were still in the play-in for a reason. So I think they very much like to see him back with this team, especially.
Right, but that's the thing. Does the finish, and you know, David Griffin going on the record saying this is going to be difficult, I think the Pelicans believe, like, my interpretation, Spears, is some people felt the exact same, what you just described, is, okay, he signed the extension, he's locked in, move on with your day, New York Knicks, move on with your day, whomever, he's not leaving. I don't think that's guaranteed yet. I think the way the Pelicans finished this season, and look, they gave the Suns all they could handle. It took Chris Paul absolutely slugging some home runs in this series to get the Suns through it. Booker came back and battled his way through, hit one big shot that carried him over the edge in six, but that could very easily have gone the other way, and we could have played seven. I think that gave the Pelicans some leverage here. I think the Pelicans have a bit of leverage to say, listen, we got a good thing going. Brandon Ingram is an all-star. We now have a terrific player in CJ McCollum. I'm sure they're going to be in the marketplace. I would not be surprised, depending on what happens with that lottery pick. I almost said Lakers. We have to go to work on that one. The lottery pick that they own that belongs to a Western Conference team, that they could potentially trade it. I think the player that they would potentially look to attach to that pick would be Devontae Graham, because Jose Alvarado's arrival. But they've got some things that they can do with this roster that are independent of Zion. And of course, they're going to be better with him. They want him. They want him in. But I don't think they're offering a 5-year max. I think they'd like to sign him for 5 years, Andrew. I mean, you want to, you know, when they signed Brandon, they got no player option. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing right now. Is I think when they and you got to remember the negotiations with Brandon were also after they had not signed him to an extension the year before,
right?
So they were able to kind of get what they wanted in terms of 5 straight years, no options, no anything. And I would think that is what they would want here in a Zion situation, especially when they're going to be trying to, but like, I don't think it's going to be the 5-181 4-year player option. I don't think it's going to be that.
Yeah. Right. I don't think they're going to want to guarantee him the full 5 years. I think they're going to want, I mean, I think they'll come into it not wanting him to have a player option. In other words, it's going to be a 5-year contract and we'll have protection, and they'll want to haggle over what triggers their protection. The most comparable one most recently is Joel Embiid, who signed a max contract that it was a max in terms of he could earn up to the max salary, but he had to hit all these triggers. And by the way, he did, and they subsequently signed to an extension. The difference between Embiid and Zion Spears is that even though Embiid missed a lot of his first 3 years, he was really on the same page with the organization throughout the time. Remember, he gave himself or was happy to have the nickname The Process. He was fully bought into that. There was a much more workability going on with the front office that hasn't shown here with Zion. So he definitely praised the coach. That's good. But I think this is going to be
a
negotiation for sure.
Embiid wasn't the star coming in that Zion was either. So I think that's part of it. I think basketball people kind of knew that he could be special, but the world didn't know. Whereas Zion walked in like the most popular player since LeBron James. And if he's healthy, I mean, I think this Pelicans team is top 4 team in the West, right?
Yeah.
But that's the continuing if. And I just think for this group, after what they've done, you almost have to, to your point, Brian, you need some buy-in. But to Zion's point, and I think where a lot of players make mistake, like I told Paul George, you're one of the smartest NBA players ever. Sign your deal and figure the rest out later. Right. Paul George got out and got where he wanted to be in a year. But I do think
that swings both ways too. The Pelicans could sign them and make sure he's locked in, and then
remember that happened in Nene. What happened in Nene? I'm trying to think of some other guys. But I don't see the Pelicans wanting to move him. And if they, if he's healthy. I mean, we know what he could do if he's healthy. He's special if he's healthy.
I'm loudly on the record. I would absolutely positively not trade him, even if you can't come to terms on an extension this year. You still control the situation. He's highly motivated to play.
Have a mentality if you're him, like in the back of your mind when you know you've had all these injury issues and you're big like that? And I heard what Anthony Davis said before he signed his last deal, man. He said one of the reasons why he signed it was he knew he's had some injury situations.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah, AD could have taken 2 years and gone back to the market and got more money, but he took the full five.
Yeah. With those injuries, with that size of a body, which with that strength, man,
I'm erring
on the side of caution, man. I'm signing that deal. I'm doing what he said. I can't sign it fast enough.
Pelicans leverage. The rest
later.
Yeah.
Pelicans leverage. So I will say one thing that could get interesting. If the, and I am not a draft expert, we'll have Mike Schmitz and Gavoni in later on closer to that. But if the, let's say that the pick that the Pelicans own from the team in Southern California, let's say it jumps into the top four, which do you know off the top of your head, Lopez, what the percentage chances of the top four? I think it's like 30-something percent.
26.2.
Okay. 26% of it going into the top four.
I think there's like another like point, like a 2% chance that their pick at wherever they're at. Oh no, that's going to Charlotte now. So no, it is now 26.
That's right. That's right. They're not a lottery team. They made the playoffs.
They could get a top four pick.
They have a 26.2% chance to get a top four pick.
They own the unprotected pick from the team from Los Angeles County that plays in crypto.com arena.
Well, there's two of them.
That's true.
But you don't want to say the name.
The Clippers pick belongs to the unprotected to the Clipper, to the Thunder. There will be no lottery pick.
What if you could get another guy from Duke in Banchero?
Okay, this is what thank you, Spears. You're taking me right there. Let's say it goes into the top four. Forget about one. Let's just say it goes to three or four. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe three of the top four projected players in this draft power forwards.
Yeah.
Right? Banchero, Chet Holmgren, who's big, but is probably going to be a four in the NBA, maybe a 3-4. I don't know. We'll see. Jabari Smith from Georgia. Auburn. Is it Georgia or Auburn? Auburn, sorry. And then probably Jaden Ivey from Purdue is the other sort of top four guy. So three of the top four are power forwards. So if you really want to see why things could get wild and the Zion market could be like, it could, the eyebrows could pop up. The lottery is 2 weeks from this podcast coming out. It's May 17th, Tuesday night. So always a big day, but that pick hops, Lopez. Boy, it could make something interesting. I would still hold on to Zion, but it would certainly make a new factor in the negotiations. I don't think any of those guys are as good as Zion or have the top end of Zion, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, but I think you could have maybe outside Apollo, who would have a similar type game. Jabari Smith is a good shooter. Could maybe play in some lineups next to him. Chet, where does Chet play? I think that's going to be fascinating. I think he is a very good player. If I'm in the top four, the one I have my eye on right now is I'd have my eye on Jaden Ivey if I'm the Pelicans.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Supercuts. Let's face it, life is busy. Between work and family and more work, our to-do lists have a way of getting longer instead of shorter. Luckily, Supercuts is here to make at least the haircut part of your life easy. Supercuts is perfect for people who need a haircut but don't have a ton of time for a haircut. No more scouring the web for salons with availability. You can use the Supercuts app to find the location nearest to you and check in or just walk in. Another bonus, the salon shows estimated wait times, so you know exactly what you're in for. That way, you're only in salon when you need to be. And don't expect to stay a while. As for the cut itself, it's always super solid, thanks to Supercuts highly trained stylists. Get in, get out, and get to that thing that you needed a haircut for. Whether you've got a big presentation coming up or a wedding, or you just need some upkeep, Supercuts makes getting a haircut effortless. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Check in now on the Supercuts app or on supercuts.com. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. So you're saying if they got a top, because they do need a point guard. So if they say they got a top four pick, it wouldn't necessarily mean they'd be drafting one of those.
And I think Jaden's
not necessarily
four, probably.
And I think it would. I mean, I could see some lineups where Jabari plays. By the way, Jabari's dad played at LSU. I think they would be okay if they were picking there, especially if they were three or four with. If there was a run on the three bigs and they were sitting there at four and they were able to take Ivy, or if they, you know, they felt like they could get a Jabari, or, you know, or at that point, hey, if somebody wants to come up and pay for Chet and we can get something else, or pay for Paulo.
Let me throw this in. Cause I got some, I got to see Banchero up close twice in NCAA tournament. I got to see Holmgren three times. If it's Holmgren, it's going to take some time. If it's Ben, and
think
I think
of the nicknames that Holmgren and Zion, if they were playing together on the same team,
I could see Holmgren coming off the bench at first. I don't see physically him being a starter. But that kid Banchero, boy.
He came on real nice down in there in March. Let's see what happens in the lottery.
It's still 26% chance.
Banchero might make you think about some things.
All right. We'll see. We'll just bring it up. All right. So we have two playoff games tonight that we're not going to know what happened in. Spears, you're going to be at one of them. Probably the more interesting series on these nights because of the unfortunate injury to Embiid. We'll see if he can come back in three or four. I know Woj said it was possible. Ramona Shelburne also saying he's supposed to get checked out on Wednesday or Thursday, and hopefully he'll be healing okay. The series that I think has got the chance to be a very interesting one in this round is the series that Lopez and I are on, which is Bucks Celtics. Lopez, I've seen this before where a team comes off one series and gets into another and the change of pace slaps them in the face. And this can be difficult for fans, I think, to understand. Certainly when I was young in my career, I didn't understand it. How can you possibly not be aware of the Bucks? You play in the league with the Bucks. You play them many times over the course of the year. It's not like you don't know who Brook Lopez is. It's not like you don't know who Bobby Portis is. It's not like their starting lineup was something they'd never seen before. Actually, it was something the Celtics never seen before, but they played it in the last round after Middleton got hurt. But yet, when you go out there and actually play against it, it's just shocking. It just knocks you off your game. And you know where you see it historically, as I've watched teams, you see it in passing. When you play against a team that's that big and you're not used to it, and you think, oh, I have this passing lane, and all of a sudden you don't because their arms are longer. It seems really basic and almost dumb. But when you don't know what passes you can throw because you're not used to how big the team is against you, it messes you up. And let me just give you the numbers. In game one, the Bucks, who started Portis, Lopez, and Giannis, and have perimeter defenders that play high pressure, the Bucks generated 17 deflections. 17 deflections in that game alone. And I am going to have our stats people look it up. I didn't have time to do it before the pod today. I'll bet the Nets had more than 17 deflections in that series, that four game series, but I'll bet it wasn't a lot more in the whole series combined. And so the Celtics got shell shocked by how big, tough, and strong the Bucks were, especially coming off the Nets. It is human nature. I know that Nets series, It was a big playmaking series. Kyrie was throwing in stuff. Durant was throwing in stuff. You know, there were haymakers being thrown, especially for the first three games. But it wasn't played at the defensive level that the Celtics are going, or that the Bucks are going to play in this series. And now all of a sudden, Milwaukee's got home court, and it's now incumbent on the Celtics to raise their level of offense to meet this. That's what I, my takeaway was, and what I'm going to be looking forward going into the Tuesday night, Lopez.
Yeah, the biggest thing was, I think both Udoka and Jaylen Brown kind of made passing comments to it yesterday of being surprised, and that they shouldn't have been at this point, of the level of physicality that the Bucks were going to play. I think for most of the game, it was officiated in a way that lent itself to a lot of contact, which I'm sure Drew Holiday appreciated, the way he likes to play defense, which I'm sure
the crowd in Boston's had something to say about Scott Foster.
They did. That was the first time I had heard that about a referee. Clearly, I think all three of us heard it in many different forms in New Orleans during that. About Jay Crowder during that first round series. Yeah. But yeah, it was, to me, it was officiated in a way that kind of led itself to contact, and the Bucks took advantage of that. I mean, they were very physical at the point of contact. They were very, very physical on drives. Boston just couldn't get anything inside the arc. They were 10 of 34 inside the arc. They took three jumpers. I think they were 10 of 31 in the paint. They were 0 of 3 outside the paint. Udoka mentioned, he's like, we had mid-ranges. We didn't take them. We would either try to barrel into the paint or we would settle for threes. And they shot 36% on threes. They were 18 of 50. But I don't think they want to shoot 53s again.
Yeah, two stats that blew my mind about this game real quick, not to interrupt you, but otherwise I'll forget. The fewest two-point makes in the 75-year history of the Celtics franchise. They had 10 two-pointers. They did make, I think, 18 threes. 75 years, playoffs and regular season, 10 two-pointers. The second thing is their average shot distance for the game was 18 feet. 18 feet. Now, it's one of those things where it's the average. I don't think they probably took many actual 18-footers. That's like the
one actual 18-footer. I looked at it last night.
That's like the incredible LeBron stat. I think LeBron's career averages are 27-7-7.
He's never had a game with 27-7.
But he has never had a game of 27-7-7. That is an absolutely incredible statistic. I mean, you would think, at the amount of games he would play, he would just fall ass backwards into that. But it just goes to your point you're making, is that basically they couldn't score inside, and so they had to chuck a bunch of threes, which, you know, they made a lot. But Milwaukee, that's exactly how Milwaukee wants to play him, Spears.
Well, I'll be honest. I was on a plane during that game. I believe the expert on that game to you, because I didn't see any of it.
Well, I can't talk much about the Memphis game because – Andrew and I were working during the Memphis Golden State game. I mean, I watched.
I could talk about that one.
We did watch the end of it. That end was pretty nice.
We did watch the end of it. And we watched frame by frame on the Draymond ejection. shout out to Draymond, by the way, who got ejected, came out, you know, showered, came out to the tunnel to welcome his team back in. And then Draymond, you know, his number one job is to play basketball and to play defense, particularly. His offense is getting worrisome again. He really got away with a quasi Ben Simmons moment at the end of that last series, where he was basically open underneath the basket and he threw it out to the 3-point line. It was a better decision than Ben Simmons, because he was throwing it out to an open 3-point shooter, but he basically had a free layup that he didn't take. He later explained that it wasn't a Ben Simmons situation, but the fact that he had to make that case was a little bit worrisome. Also, as soon as he went out of the game after that ejection, the Warriors started playing a lot better on offense. But we'll set all that aside for a second.
Yeah.
I love Draymond finishing the game and then knowing good content, running off to his hotel room and immediately recording a podcast about the game. That was hats off to Mr. Green.
Well, I mean, I guess he could get some barbecue room service, right? He can't really hang out in the streets of Memphis, so he had time. Right. It was an early game. The one thing that's interesting to me about that game was Ja Morant had a big game scoring wise, but he had to work for his, man. I thought the defense they played on him, including the last shot in particular, was pretty great. A lot of helping, a lot of tough shots, and he's just so good that he could still make a lot of them, but he had work for every bit of that 30-plus game. And Jaren Jackson had a great game as well. But you had Steph and Clay and Gary Payton II, who started, in foul trouble from the beginning. Draymond Green's out of the game in the middle of the second quarter, and they still lost.
I agree. And Memphis has to win that game.
That's a crushing loss. And if you're the Warriors, you're like, we didn't even play that good. We were in foul trouble. That's not going to happen every game. And all the fouls slowed the pace down. I think if I'm the Warriors, I'm feeling pretty good about.
Plus, you know. when did the Warriors travel? Like they found out who they were playing. I realized they were probably preparing for Memphis. Memphis had the lead. The Warriors found out they were playing who they were playing Friday night.
Yeah.
They didn't fly Friday night. They flew Saturday, got in late Saturday for an afternoon. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and cry. I mean, Memphis had to play. Memphis had less rest, but they weren't playing at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a type of game where you would catch them. You know, it was a great opportunity for Memphis to go up 1-0.
Yeah. And Memphis and Minnesota is so close that Ja was able to go to the Allen Iverson high school all-star game, which I don't know where exactly that was at, but he certainly looked spry dancing on the sidelines there. Keep in mind this too, that after the Warriors play and Memphis play game two, they don't play again till Saturday. So you're giving these old dogs 3 days to get their bodies right, 3 days to rest. Steph, 3 days to rest. Clay, three. I mean, if they somehow, even if they split, but if they could somehow get this second one and then have 3 days off before playing at home, yeah, I mean, this is, I hate to say must win early, but the Grizzlies have a must win in game two for sure.
Yeah, and same with the Celtics-Bucks series. There's 3 days off between two and three, and I'd like to say thank you because this old dog like to have a couple of days to recover after all the time on the road. Yeah, you know, it was a really interesting final play. And by the time this pod comes out, it'll be kind of, you know, old by then, but they basically ran, in football terms, they ran a jet sweep for Morant. They put him way in the backcourt, and he gets this running start, and then was it Bain? Somebody, like, I don't care who, but they pitched him the ball. It was like an option play.
It was a great play.
And he comes flying off, and again, to keep it in football terms, Klay Thompson set the edge. Unlike what happened against Minnesota, where, you know, Ant went for the pick, Anthony Edwards went for the pick, and you know, basically then Ja was able to choose his route to the rim. Klay played much better defense on it. And I'm sure that the Warriors, because I think Ja was 3 of 3 in late game situations in last 3 of 3 this year on last possession shots to tie or go ahead. And I'm sure they studied that, and I'm sure they went over it. And I'm sure that they knew that Ja prefers to go left in those situations. And
he prefers to go in the paint, which they didn't allow him to do. He was outside the lane when he took that shot. He had a really difficult angle to make.
He still could have made it. He still could have made it.
Because he's Ja Morant.
I think he thought he was going to be a little bit closer. I think Klay cut it off.
Yeah.
And he was just a little bit further to his left than he wanted to be.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I agree. And then, you know, they bring Poole off the bench, which you can tell that Steve Kerr is going to be juggling, trying to weigh that lineup, because they're just not as good defensively with that lineup, with Poole and the three-guard lineup. But he's so good on offense. Three times a week, the Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of the games. Plus, they have a community of friends, including Dominique Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. That's The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And on Wednesdays and Fridays, the podcasts are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. With the safe return of live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop slam, every one-timer, every sideline grab can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you have to do is collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. It's that easy. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the events that matter to you. So grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com to download the app today. Vivid Seats. Life happens live. Keeps offers a simple, affordable, and stress-free way to keep your hair via convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months. You don't even have to leave your home. 24/7 care and support. Keeps has a network of expert medical advisors, prescribers, and care specialists to support you in making your hair goals a reality. And low cost. Treatments start at just $10 per month, and Keeps offers generic versions of two FDA-approved medications to prevent hair loss. Treatment plans are affordable, typically half the cost of pharmacy prices. Keeps has everything your hair needs, delivered straight to your door with discreet packaging and proven results. Remember, prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see results, so act fast. When it comes to your hair, save more, spend less. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/hoop to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's keeps.com/hoop to get your first month for free. keeps.com/hoop. Well, next time we have Bobby Marks on, we'll go over the the finances. Spears, they're going to have to give Jordan Poole how much he's eligible for. He was a 28th or 29th pick.
Yeah,
he's in the same draft class as Ja and Zion. So, like Ja and Zion, eligible for an extension this summer. They're going to have to pay him, man. They're going to have to pay him. I don't know how much, but
yeah,
they may have to go deep on him, and they're already paying so much money. I don't regret voting for Ja for most improved. I know that that's a thing. I'll stand proudly on that choice. But talk about a come up. I mean,
yeah, you know what? A coach from another team told me, he said, the best thing the Warriors did when Steph and Klay were out was basically give Jordan the ball and say, green light, do whatever you want to do. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake, but just gave him the green light. They also, and I wonder how he looks back at it now, like he spent a lot of time in the G League.
Yeah.
A lot of time in Santa Cruz, and he got the green light there as well. Yeah, these like the Warriors would have a game and it'd be like, yeah, Jordan Poole had 40 in Santa Cruz, yeah. 38. And I'm like, dang, like that's when I was starting to pay attention to what he was doing. And so the Warriors just did a great job of letting him grow. I kept hearing that his work ethic was the best on the team. I was like, best on the team? Better than Klay and Steph, like best on the team. And so then like he built himself, credit to him. The Warriors built him into, you know, credit to Chris DeMarco. They built him into this.
Yeah. Kendra Andrews from ESPN. She has a story that came out today on Jordan Poole's development where she talks to Chris DeMarco, who's one of Steve Kerr's assistants. And is also the Bahamian national coach. I don't know if the Bahamas will ever get their guys together, but if they do,
yeah.
Do you know who's on the Bahamian national team?
I talked to one yesterday.
Klay, DeAndre.
Oh Ayton. No, not Klay. USA Basketball would have to grant him.
That's right. He played that. That's right.
Yeah.
Clay could play for the Bahamas. He's from Bahamian. Buddy Hield.
Oh, Buddy.
Anyway, that's right. Clay played for USA Basketball. He's ineligible. In fact,
so it's basically those three, but
quite frankly,
you could just me and the rest of us could join the team and they'd beat some folks.
quite frankly, and I mean, this is real talk, where we are with American centers.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get DeAndre Ayton nationalized. Steve Kerr, see if you can work on that.
He's been here for a while. He's been here since high school, right?
I agree. I'm proud to make him a full-blooded American.
I can't see it.
I know. I don't think so.
I've been in his home with his mama.
You went with him to Nassau. You did a great story.
Or no, it was not Nassau. I went to his hometown.
I thought his hometown was Nassau. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I apologize. Speaking of that, of that series, of the Ayton series, you had a piece on Anscape today about Devin Booker, about, what he went through this last round, trying to come back from this hamstring injury, which he eventually got back for Game 6. Wasn't himself, but got out there and hit a huge three with a minute and a half to go that put the team that had to stay. I was talking to somebody with the Suns, and not everybody has made their ballots public, but the Suns are tracking it, those who have made their ballots public. And I think they told me that they've got about 30% of the ballots, and they think that Booker has a decent chance of making first team all NBA. It doesn't matter where he makes first team or second team. He'll make either one, and he'll be eligible for a supermax, which I assume they will sign him to. Booker, hey, Brian, has
can we go back real quick?
Because yeah,
I
go
messed
ahead.
Up. He is from Nassau. I'm sorry. I was thinking about Buddy Hield's hometown.
Okay. I thought it was Nassau. Or he's from that island. Maybe he's from outside Nassau.
No, he's from Nassau. But I don't know if we could go back real quick, and I'm sorry to interrupt that. But
all right. Ayton is from Nassau.
Yeah.
So but you talked to Booker. I saw you talking to him after the game you got him after the game in New Orleans the other night. This is going to be a big Booker series because, everybody's going to be watching Luka and, Bridges will be out there. Crowder will be out there, but Booker's going to have to defend in this series too. And they're going to test his hamstrings, Pierce.
Yeah. Well, talk to DeAndre Ayton, and he was telling me, he kept saying, we got a healthy Book now. We got a healthy Book now. So maybe he's seeing something behind the scenes or practice or something to make him feel that, Book is back and that they're not worried about the injury no more. He was actually trying to play Booker, that is, in Game 5 and was pushing to play in Game 5 and they wouldn't let him. And he's been working out with Jarrett Jack, former NBA player, and I think the good thing with that is Jack knows what's healthy and what's not. And he told Monty, he's like, look, he could play in Game 6 and you don't have to worry about it. He's not going to be his all-star self just yet, but I don't think you have to worry about him not being able to help or perhaps getting re-injured. And Monty had confidence in what Jack said and what the medical staff had to say. And allowed him to be back. And you're talking about a player who kind of quietly, has a chip on his shoulder, was spurned for MVP voting, despite the fact that his team had the best record in the league by far.
I'm not sure he was spurned. I mean, I think if he finishes in the top five, who's he replacing in the top three? You're kicking out Embiid, Jokic, or Giannis? I understand.
But I don't know, man, and we don't have to go into why I don't vote anymore. But when I did vote, winning meant a lot. To me, it just seems kind of ridiculous that you have a team that had such a great record. They were 8 games better than the team with the second best record, and none of their players were top three for MVP.
We just
fall in such a love with stats.
I think two of their players were considered, and at different times this year, I had Chris in my top 5.
Yeah. I mean, I know the NBA media world has this fascination with Jokic, and he's amazing, but he ain't won nothing. And we can keep making excuses for, well, this person's out. He's done nothing in the playoffs, right? I mean, I guess, yeah, they did go to the West Finals. I'll give him that. But I think he's four to me. Like,
I mean, look, I voted for Embiid,
Embiid, and I get it. Like, he was a one-man band, basically, right? And they had a pretty good record. Joker had an amazing season. Let me not give him his respect. He had an amazing season. So did Giannis. But this dude was the best player on a team that had 62 wins.
No, but I don't think it's an insult to Devin Booker to say that he's not Giannis. I don't think that's an insult.
Giannis could have finished third. But his team won.
Giannis, like, we don't even care about winning anymore.
About when you see, like, social media now, right? So and so had 40 and 15 and 10, but they lost. They lost. Like, what about that part that they lost the game? This dude is a winner. Like, winning should count for something major.
The guy who won the NBA championship last year probably had a real good case for a third MVP a year ago, but there was a little bit of voter fatigue because he hadn't won in the playoffs. And this is still a regular season award.
It's a regular season award. And so, his team won the most games. And they had guys that were out. Chris was out. Chris was out late in the season and they didn't even drop.
I mean, I think that speaks more to the depth of Phoenix than just the book, though.
The best player on the best team. I don't know. Winning means something to me.
I don't think it's fair to say he was. Chris Paul is a major reason why that team had 60 wins.
I get that.
I mean, they're sort of a victim of their own success that way. But I'll say this: Booker's last
I'm
year.
Not
the way
he
Booker
should be MVP, but he should have been in the top three. Somebody from that team should have been on that top three.
I mean, that's not an unreasonable position. I would just say that take one of those guys out. You're taking Jokic out because of his team's performance, but you look at his performance and it's hard to, I don't know. Let's put it this way. Last year in the playoffs, in the closeout games, Booker was a killer. To score 40 points in LA, and I know AD was out, 40 points in Staples Center, to take them out. He was a killer in the finals, even with the hamstring injury. The respect that he has gotten within the league over this last two seasons is not questioned. Whether he finishes fourth or fifth or whatever on that all MVP ballot, he's earned the respect, and he's about to get $200 million. And there could be no more respect than a team saying, we're going to invest $200 million in you.
Yeah.
And so, but I will say this, like, it was funny. There was a reporter in one of the TV reporters in Phoenix. I'm sorry, I don't know her name. She was asking some of the Suns people whether they thought Booker would be a good coach someday. And Monty started laughing. He was like, no way. He has no patience. He has 0.0 patience to be a coach. Jay Crowder, same thing. Jay Crowder just was shaking his head at the concept. Booker is incredible competitor, no patience. It's one of the reasons he's one of these other Kobe acolytes. And he has no patience for nuance. He has no patience for not being regarded. And I think it's good for him and the Suns. I think if you're a Suns fan, you may say to yourself, we don't get the respect we deserve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think you want Booker on edge. That's exactly where you want him. And your story definitely kind of, shown some light on that.
Yeah.
But that's going to be
one time, Brian, I'll tell you this story real quick. Remember when Russ was getting his triple-double record and he could have broke it in Phoenix. And this is young book. like the team's terrible and all that. And the team, the fans in Phoenix started cheering for Booker. I mean, for Russell. And Booker goes livid. He started cursing out his own fans and basically started guarding Book. I mean, Russ himself, kept him from getting the triple-double and breaking it there, made a couple big threes, got fouled on one, and turned and yelled to his own crowd, "This is my MF in the house. Don't forget it. This is my MF." And that's when I was like, whoa. I didn't know he had all that to him, man. I like he had that 80s competitive fire. He probably got a lot of that from his dad. But that's when I saw that he had potential to be a different.
He loves that era of basketball. He drives 80. Now, I'm going to maybe embarrass myself because maybe they're 70s. I don't know. He drives old school cars.
They're older.
Yeah, just say old school.
He dresses old school, right, Andrew? Yeah. Didn't he have some old school?
He did.
Maybe not all the time, but he had some
suits. He is an old soul. He is definitely an old soul.
More of those t-shirts in the finals with the cartoons and the players and stuff.
Right.
They should bring those back, by the way.
There's, I think, one of the great things that you could say to Booker, a compliment you could say, is that he's old school. I think he'd appreciate that. We'll see how he does Monday night in that game. Check out Spears' story on Anscape. Thank you, Lopez. Thank you, Spears. Lopez and I got to go over to Celtics practice right now. So we got to wrap this up. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We'll talk to you guys later this week.
NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.